underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Sue Halpern is the author of 7 books of fiction and nonfiction. Her writing has appeared in The New Yorker, New York Times Magazine, New York Review of Books, Rolling Stone, and Condé Nast Traveler, just to name a few. She's a scholar in residence at Middlebury College. Her new novel, Summer Hours at the Robbers Library, tells us about a little New England library that has become the heart of a small town. We meet Kit, Sonny, and Rusty, who are drawn to each other and to a cast of other offbeat regulars. As they come to terms with how their lives have unraveled, they also discover how they might knit them together again and finally reclaim their stories. Again, the new novel is Summer Hours at the Robbers Library, and it is a great pleasure to welcome Sue Halpern to this week's book show. How are you?
I am good. I'm so happy to be talking to you.
It's always a pleasure to speak with you. You, of course, have done so much with and for libraries. Was it natural that you would write a novel like this that ultimately would tell the story, some of the well, idiosyncratic nature of a library?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things is interesting about this book is that I started writing it in the Adirondacks up in Johnsburg, where I lived for many, many years and where I helped start the town library. And so I think it is kind of appropriate that as I was sitting there, this story came to me, and this story was set in a library with a librarian as its a protagonist. So, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Kit, who is the librarian who comes to this library and where she is in her life and ultimately what she is looking for when she comes to the library in the small town.
So Kit is a person who grew up with books, who loves books. It was probably inevitable that she would become a librarian. And she looked at that work as you know, very important and sort of good work in the community. And she had her life kind of upended by her husband. And I'm not going to say why or how, but it made it impossible for her to continue to live in the community where she was living. And so she's looked for a place to go to that's as far away and different as that place and where nobody knows her. And she goes to the library as a place of solitude, as a place where she really doesn't have to talk to many people at most of the time. So it's a refuge for her, as it is, I think, for a lot of people.
What is interesting, though, that anyone who has spent any time in a library or anyone who knows is a librarian or is a regular at a library, they can become raucous places, can't they?
Well, this library does become it does become and the Johnsburg Library as well. You know, these become the centers of a community, and they also become a home for a lot of people. Not in the sense of, you know, they don't live there, but
right.
But their heart is there, and I think that that's what happens to this library for these people in a community that, in many ways, is failing. And the library is a place where people meet, and it's like the commons, it's like the town green, and people just can be themselves and learn a lot about each other in these spaces.
Enter Sonny, who is a homeschooled 15-year-old who gets arrested for shoplifting a book, a dictionary to be exact, and the judge says, okay, go do community service at the library for the summer. What does that bring out in Kit?
So Kit really is, she's so hurt. She's so inside of herself that she really doesn't want to engage with anybody. And here comes this kid who in some ways is a little bit feral. She's you know, homeschooled or no-schooled. She's not really interactive with a lot of people. And she's very curious about Kit. And she's assigned, essentially, to Kit for the summer. And Kit has to figure out, like, how is she going to deal with this kid? What's she going to do with her? And this girl is curious enough about Kit and about books and about life that Kit almost has to engage with her. And Sunny really is the catalyst, the person who can bring Kit out of herself. And Kit doesn't know that, but that's what happens.
Let's talk for a moment about the library itself. The Robbers Library is in New Hampshire, and as you write about in the book, built in 1912 in Riverton, and one of over 1,600 Carnegie libraries in the U.S. Was it one of those libraries that you had in mind to set the book in?
Yes, actually. So I had done a story for the New York Times Magazine in the town of Braddock, Pennsylvania, and that's where the very first Carnegie Library was built. The library is across the street from where the steel mills were that Carnegie owned. And I got to go there and spend some time in this library, and it was really, really amazing. It's very old, obviously. It's not that well maintained, although they're trying to raise money to keep it functional. But it was so remarkable. They had tunnels leading from the steel mills into the library, and they had showers so people could take the grime of the steel mill off. They have a basketball court, and there's a theater, and obviously there are books and books and books. And it was this vision that Carnegie had, that the library could be the community. The library could be a place where people could learn, where they could communicate with each other, where they could spend time with each other outside of work. And it was that library in particular that I had in my mind. And the idea, I sort of melded that with our library in Johnsburg, which became the central, I think, organizing place for our community. And so it was the idea that a library could transform a place and the idea that people could be transformed within the library, by the library.
And it really is all about the people, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, yes, it's all about the people. And I mean, I think that's, in some sense, that's what a library is, even though, right, you know, they're sanctuaries for books. But one of the things that I learned in Johnsburg, in our library there, which is small, is that the library attracts all sorts of people, people you wouldn't necessarily interact with. But there, in our small library, there they were. And so people would start talking to each other. Someone would say, oh, I saw that movie. And someone else would say, yeah, here's what I liked about it. Or, you know, you should try this one if you like that one. Or here's this book I really liked. And these are people who didn't necessarily know each other or maybe just had kind of seen each other. And yet the library was this place where they could connect and make friendships.
I've been fascinated. I'm on my local library board, and one of the things that we've been grappling with, and I think a lot of libraries are grappling with, is that there was a point where so many libraries said, oh, well, libraries are known as books, but they're really the centers of the community. So these are all the things people come for: internet, people come for community programs, people come for all of these different reasons. And recently we sat down and said, oh, but we have to remind people that we are about books too.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
So that's a really interesting point, and I think it is has been an issue in a lot of libraries. What was fascinating to me when we were starting the library was that the rules for getting a library certified, a public library certified as for the state of New York, the rules had things like you have to have two computers and things like that, but it actually made no mention of the books. it was very, very odd. But we made books the centerpiece of our library, and then we added all of these other things. But what really happened was that the people who used the library, who came there for the books, started to talk to each other, and things started to happen. And so a book club was formed, and a a theater group was formed and a knitting group was formed. But these all rose organically out of the fact that people came there to read.
When you think about the power of this particular library, of what happens at the Robbers Library, we talked about Kit, we talked about Sonny. I also want to mention Rusty and what brings Rusty into this trio.
Yeah, so Rusty is a kind of refugee from the financial crisis. He's that guy you see who has a really nice suit and a really nice haircut and a really nice car who, you know, in 2007 or 2008 basically lost everything. And he shows up at the library because he thinks that it somehow connects to a bank book that he's found in his drawer that his mother has left him. She's died. And he's not sure he's in the right place, but he goes to this library because it's the place where he can research this bank book and try to figure out what's going on with this money that he thinks he might have somewhere. And again, I mean, he's someone who probably in regular life and normal circumstances wouldn't necessarily show up at the library. But the library has records and it has archives and it has histories, and it also has a computer. So these are all things that he's finding very, very useful in his quest. What he doesn't realize is very useful in his quest is a relationship that he'll develop with Sonny and then through Sonny with Kit.
Hmm. How much did you know? I mean, you obviously knew about their original predicaments, but as you went on in the writing, how much did you know of where they would lead you?
Well, that's a really interesting question, because I think, at least for me, when I'm writing, I usually know where the book is going to end, but I don't necessarily know how my characters are going to get there. And that's the interesting part. And I know this is going to sound a little odd, but I let them tell me. You know, I give them certain characteristics and I put them in a certain place, and then they kind of talk to me and tell me, you know, what's going on. And so I just know that they have to get to where I want them to be at the very end, but I get a little help from them. Sorry, a lot of help.
Sue Halpern is our guest. The name of the new novel is Summer Hours at the Robbers Library. It is published by Harper Perennial. You wrote a beautiful piece for The Nation titled "Libraries Are a Space Where Everyone Belongs." What do you think the state is currently of the local library?
If I'm judging from my town here in Vermont and my town there in the Adirondacks, I would say it's very good. I know that that's not necessarily true financially because lots of municipalities are strapped for cash. So I think the answer depends, you know, if we're talking about money or we're talking about usage. And I think that libraries have demonstrated over and over and over again how valuable they are to individuals and how valuable they are to communities. And that's why when the Trump administration wanted to eliminate funding, the federal funding, which is a smaller portion of the funding for libraries, but significant, especially in places where they don't have a lot of local funding. When they wanted to get rid of that funding, Congress came back and said, no, this is, you know, our constituents don't want this. And in fact, Congress came back with more money than had originally been allocated. So I think that demonstrates that even in these kind of polarized times, people all over the country recognize the value of libraries to their communities.
But as I'm reading the novel, there's a scene in which a group of immigrants, they've newly arrived, and they're told by the librarian, oh, come on in, take as many books as you want, they're free. Well, does that fully compute in Trump America?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. If you're talking about the immigrants or you're talking about the free, because
I find it interesting that all of that is going on, but then sort of makes sense as to why the funding was cut, doesn't it?
I'm not sure. I mean, maybe. I think there was probably a sense that these are places where people who are new to this country can get a kind of civic education that they're not going to get because they didn't, you know, go to school here.
Right.
And that was actually Carnegie's original intent. Carnegie's original intent was that libraries would supplement public education, that a lot of people working in his factories didn't have the opportunity to go to school because they had to start working when they were quite young. And that his goal was to create these institutions where people could go and basically teach themselves. And so it's true, you know, when people come to this country, the library is a magnet. The library in many communities has ESL classes and has citizenship classes and has, you know, the reputation of being an open place, and it doesn't cost money. So, you know, it becomes a very valuable resource to those newest people in this country. So, yeah, I can see that. Mm. But, you know, the other thing that's really interesting is even people, adults who don't read that much or maybe don't even read at all, are often very, very keen to bring their children to the library. Mm-hmm. So also the newest people among us are brought there, and it's understood by their caretakers that the library is a place where they belong.
You write in your Nation piece about Chicago and the Arlington Heights Library having to cancel an immigrant rights workshop because there were a lot of hate calls and there were threats of arrests from ICE. One of the things that I thought was interesting in that part of your article is that libraries are not legally protected from the reach of an agency, but they certainly are thought of often in the community as a sanctuary, aren't they?
Yes, that was actually very surprising to me. So there are certain places where federal agents like ICE agents can't go and kind of pluck people out, like churches, for instance. So I kind of assumed that libraries would be among those places, and they're not. And because they also are magnets for immigrants and, you know, new Americans, then they become magnets, if not for ICE raids, and there haven't been any in libraries, but then for people who are, you know, opposed to our immigration policies to kind of focus their attention. And that's what happened in Arlington Heights and outside of Chicago, a library that had immigration classes for years, as do many libraries. But in this case, it became the focal point for a number of hateful groups and comments and threats.
So here's a line from your article. If at this moment in time these activities make librarians seem like radicals, it is only because democracy itself has come to be seen in some quarters as radical. That's very sobering, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's true, obviously, because I wrote it. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting. You know, there are all those funny, not so funny, actually, experiments where people go out with like the Bill of Rights and they read them, you know, on the street to individuals, and they'll, you know, and people will say, oh my God, you know, that's communist, that's, you know, whatever they are, you know, and then the person reading it says, well, this is our Bill of Rights, you know. It's sobering that people don't know kind of what this country stands for and what it's founded on and what the notions of freedom and responsibility that are built into that Constitution are. And because of that, then things like providing citizenship classes for people become politicized, which is just a shame because, you know, we want people to understand what it is to be an American. We want them to understand what the requirements are of citizenship. And it would just be a shame to make that somehow a point of contention.
When you think about the role of a library, it's interesting it becoming the centerpiece of a community because it just shows that if you allow space and a place for people to go and they have access to books and the internet and each other, of what can be created in those spaces.
Absolutely. And that, I think, for me, was what I learned from helping to start the library in Johnsburg. I mean, it is a library that was put together in the back room of our town hall. So, you know, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't big. It was very, very, you know, functional. That was about it. And yet, as soon as we put the bookshelves up and put the books on and got the movies and put in the computers that we had to have and opened the doors, it it was just became a very, very attractive space. One of the things that I'll always remember is that when we first started it, we were told to get 500 library cards because it would take us a year to go through them. This is a community mm-hmm. that has less than 2,000 people. And we went through those in 3 weeks. So we ordered another 500 and we went through those before the year was out. People wanted to be there, and people were there who never knew that they wanted to be there. So it was quite beautiful to watch.
And your library in Johnsburg was ultimately replacing a bookmobile, right?
Yes, we had a bookmobile through the Southern Adirondack Library Service that just kind of got old and rusty and had to be retired. And it's an expensive proposition, and there wasn't money for it. And this is a bookmobile that went all the way around the Adirondacks. It was in Hamilton County. It was in Warren County. And so, yeah, there was no more access, easy access to books and to interlibrary loan and that sort of thing.
My mother was a librarian, and my earliest days, I remember being in a car seat as she drove from town to town in her bookmobile. It was one of those like formative experiences where you just are bringing the books to the people, but it works equally as well when the people come to the books, obviously.
Yeah. So we went to the bookmobile for a couple of years before we lost the bookmobile. And it was always also fun not just to go on the bookmobile, which was a kind of a delightful little mm-hmm. experience, but to wait. It was a little bit like waiting for the school bus. So like people would gather, and communicate with each other, and like it was great. And then we get on this tiny little bookmobile and rub shoulders, and then we get off the bookmobile and go our separate ways. But with the library, we had a little more space, not much more, but we had a little bit more.
So it seems as though that this book, I mean, besides telling a beautiful story, also just is ripe for being the subject of a book club at a library, right? I mean, it seems to be made for that. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Hello, book clubs and libraries.
There's a lot to discuss.
There is. It's interesting. I did a book talk. I've done a bunch of book talks now at libraries around. I actually was in Saratoga not that long ago. And a couple here and it's been really interesting and fun because the people who come to a book club in a library or a book talk in a library are people who love books and love libraries. So, they're already primed to be thinking about these things and to be eager to talk about them.
What is next for you? What are you working on now?
Well, that's really... That's a dangerous question to ask a writer. But I just started writing a series of pieces for The New Yorker Online. They have nothing to do with anything, really, that I've written about in the book. But they have to do with, we're back to these big subjects like democracy and technology and how we're going to kind of negotiate that space. So I just finished one today, and I'll just keep doing that, I think, at least through this set of elections, and then we'll see kind of what happens after that.
Does that inform, even this novel was written before the election, right?
Oh, yeah. It was written well before the election, and in fact, it's very interesting to me because that scene that you mentioned about immigrants, I wrote, I want to say, like 3 years ago. Certainly well before this current climate that we now live in. And I really wasn't thinking that it was really going to be contentious that we had these people coming into our country who wanted to become American citizens. It just never even crossed my mind. And it never really crossed my mind that libraries would be a point of contention either, that they would be seen in some places as being kind of places of, radical or something. I mean, it's just like the weirdest thing to me because, it's a library. It's the place where the librarian told you to be quiet, It's and so that is all just very strange to me. But I also think one of the great opportunities that I've had, having written a book about a library, is to advocate for libraries. And something that I certainly have done in the past and now becomes, I think, even more urgent.
Sue Halpern's new novel is Summer Hours at the Robbers Library. It is published by Harper Perennial. Sue, it's always a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Joe. I really, really appreciate it. And I appreciate the work that you do for your library.
Thank you very much. Okay. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.